Hey everybody, it's Joe Trippi and welcome back to That Trippi Show. Can you believe it's been 2 years since Joe Biden took office? With so much happening, seemingly every day, we thought we'd take stock of President Biden's performance 2 years in. Plus, spoiler alert, the worst person you can think of wants the worst job you can think of. What's going on in the latest round of Trump beepstakes? Alex, where should we get started?
Well, our listeners should know that every once in a while, it takes you more than one take to record. And your first take, you said 10 years since Joe Biden took office instead of two.
And then I cracked myself up and laughed for an inordinate amount of time. And that's what we're saving you guys all from.
I had this whole thing about how, you know how like I read somewhere that having a kid, the worst part is that the days drag, but the years fly by. And that kind of feels like the first 2 years of the Biden presidency. It feels like every day is really long, but all we blink and we're through 2 or 10 years. Joe, with so much going on, and you can get into it, how has the president been doing?
You know, first of all, I got to talk about this analogy. Alex does not have kids. I've had three. And so it's interesting to have him, you know, tell me what that's like and how days drag and years fly. But anyway, they do. On the years fly, you wake up and one day they're, you know, things have radically changed. I don't really understand what that has to do with the first 2 years of Biden's administration, but where we were when he took office, you know, we were in the middle of a pandemic. Actually, I do kind of understand what you're saying. I mean, that seems probably to a lot of people like it was a long time ago. But look, it's been 2 years. When he took office, we were in the middle of a pandemic, you know, terrible vaccine rollout. America was losing ground globally. This was more than just a return of decency. And what Biden was saying was, you know, a fight for the soul of America. He took on much more than that. And so, you know, Joe Biden's first 2 years were really, when you look at it, real concrete investments in the American people. And you know, many of them are just paying off now. I mean, as we enter the second 2 years of his first term, I mean, three huge bills passed that we're just seeing the effects of right now. I mean, everything from, you know, insulin just now, even though it was passed last year, just now, insulin is capped at $35 for all those people, you know, have diabetes, depend on insulin, and they were paying, you know, thousands of dollars a year. It's now going to be capped at $35. Prescription drug costs going down. You know, the infrastructure bill that got passed, those bridges, those projects, those investments in renewable and other things out there that bill had for infrastructure, that's going to be really start building this year and creating those jobs. And we were already doing really well on jobs. We'll get to that. But, you know, the fourth quarter economic numbers come out and we grew at a 2.9% rate. I mean, that's incredible. This is also part of it, Alex. You know, we warned everybody, hey, the red wave isn't coming. And then, you know, now everybody's going, what red wave? Will the press start doing what recession, since they hype the crap out of that? So look, we've got the lowest unemployment numbers in 50 years. In January of 2021, there were 828,000 unemployment claims. This January, that number is 198,000. Record oil production and growing every year, despite the right screaming that it's his fault that we're not producing, that we're not energy independent. It's just insane when we have record oil production and it's been growing. Job creation. Biden's seen, you know, five times the number of jobs created in the last 2 years than Republicans saw created under their last three presidents combined.
Which I have to stop you for a second, which is kind of a mind-boggling number. Obviously, economy has its ups and downs, but when you look at the kind of how we've gotten there, and you mentioned, Joe, the three big bills, the long-term economic impact. I remember one of our first podcasts, we were talking about what we needed to do to keep America competitive globally and what kind of your prediction for what Joe Biden could do. This was still during the campaign. He wasn't even president yet. But remember, we were basically talking about how do we make sure that we're bringing the world up rather than bringing America down to the level of some of these other countries. And how you do it is bills like this.
Yeah, because it's going to be, look, everything we've done, you know, you need to lead the world in innovation, in creating new products that people want. And we spend a lot of time with some of the better or engineering things like Facebook and Twitter. And I think, you know, the investments that you're seeing in the infrastructure bill to really create other investment in companies, you know, again, things like chip production coming back, manufacturing of chips coming back to the United States, places like Ohio and Arizona. By the way, a lot of this job creation is happening in red states, you know, creating jobs and investment in the future economy that's being built right now in this country, instead of depending and reverting back on manufacturing that are gone. It's creating manufacturing jobs, but in the future, and building the future energy independence of the United States. And by the way, it's the same thing. I mean, you know, if we start making the cars that have the longest ability range for electric cars, just as when we starting to innovate and built the first cars, the rest of the world want them, right? And that's going to create even more jobs. I mean, it's not just cars, though. It's the stations, it's the charging stations, it's a lot of the infrastructure that needs to be built for the future. And it's just getting started, but this is all literally, you know, bills that Biden was able, under horrendous polarized circumstances, to get passed. I mean, you know, he had basically Kamala Harris breaking ties, so he had to get two or three Republicans on some of these things. And the same thing, even the House was not big majority. So the fact that he did this, all of this, you know, the infrastructure bill that was actually bipartisan, Ukraine, building a coalition of Western democracies and holding strong despite Putin's best efforts, you know, restoring leadership on American leadership on a global scale. It'd be hard pressed to see who could have held and pulled that alliance together to do what Joe Biden was able to pull together and help Ukraine compete and fight against, you know, a overwhelmingly brutal Putin. That only American leadership could have done that.
And everyone said it would be a 3-day thing. They, you know, so I think there's a case to be made that the holding together the coalition of Western democracies, especially, by the way, remember, as winter rolled into Europe, energy prices, they were suffering a lot more than we were in a lot of these European countries.
Yeah. And by the way, Trump had been doing everything he could to blow up that alliance any way he could. And I'm not talking just about NATO, any of the European countries that are engaged with us in taking on Putin. Trump was laying out the welcome mat for Putin and blowing that alliance, any alliance that would stand up to him, destroying it, wrecking it. And so, you know, all that was happening as Biden came in over the last 2 years. And just that alone, I mean, I think the leadership, the return of respect on the international stage, the competitiveness of the infrastructure, what it's going to do to create the jobs that will make us more competitive and our infrastructure more competitive. All this is happening in a way that I think, look, if you really look at the last 2 years, you know, as everybody was screaming, as the press and of course the Republicans were screaming, inflation, gas prices, oh, the open border, all those things that they were doing. And by the way, people were feeling a hell of a lot of economic pain with inflation and gas prices. You know, Biden's approval and favorability, as it would for any president who held office while inflation and gas prices are soaring, went down. His approval went down. But you're already seeing that as his accomplishments click in, and among them is, you know, the decline in gasoline prices over this time, and again, as inflation is now decreasing monthly as GDP and jobs still hold pretty strong. And now a lot of the people that were screaming recession, recession, recession are saying, hey, you know, it looks like maybe there's going to be a soft landing or maybe even no recession at all. It's pretty incredible when you do look at the pandemic, at the botched Trump response to it, at how deep a hole we were in with jobs, with not just jobs, but literally destruction of the supply chain, you know, as COVID hit and people started buying in different ways. To be where we are today, to have and with Putin invading Ukraine, to be in the face of all that and be where we are today with five times the number of jobs created, five times in the last 2 years, under Joe Biden, we created five times the number that Republicans saw created under their last three presidents, combining all the jobs that those three presidents saw in terms of job growth under their terms, did it in two. And so, you know, when you start looking at that, and by the way, you know, one of the things I know I'm maybe jumping a little ahead here, but the press hasn't really reported much of this, right? In other words, there have been tons of red wave, tons of recession, inflation, gas prices, all the way as those things, you know, were hyped. But no one's really talking about, wait a minute, we may not see one, a recession. You know, gas prices, he did what he did tap the strategic oil reserve. He took a lot of actions that lowered. And by the way, the Republicans said, oh, no, you can't do that. Now, and by the way, when he did do the oil reserves, we made a profit because when we went back to fill them again, we bought them at lower prices than we had when the reserve was created, you know, when those same barrels were bought for the reserve that we used to do that.
I didn't see that headline on Fox News, Joe.
No, you don't see a lot of that on any press, but actually his moves to lower gasoline prices for the American people actually in that the Republicans opposed actually netted more revenue and put oil back in the reserve at a cheaper price, meaning it was all done in a way that not only saved the American people money but actually replaced that with even cheaper reserve than previous administrations had built. So you this is all things that the Biden administration has done under his leadership. And I think, look, what, you know, you have the economy stabilizing and, you know, and it's trending in the right direction. I think, you know, the war in Ukraine increasingly now with the Abrams tanks, Germany sending Leopards and the rest of Europe sort of, you know, trying to get more Leopards there. I mean, this is all because of Biden's leadership that's happening. What I was saying is, so during this whole period where his favorable numbers were low because people were really feeling inflation and gas prices and the Republicans were, you know, your hair on fire, outrage machine going. I don't see anything but the other side now of that. Inflation's going down. In other words, in the next 18 months, I think Americans are going to feel prices going down. Supply chain really is fixed. Putin's in deep trouble. Biden really held the coalition together and the alliances. And you see that, and that's going, I think, only going to continue to build. Again, the CHIPS Act is going to grow a ton of jobs for those without college degrees. The Inflation Reduction Act will be heavily concentrated in red states, congressional districts. All have the potential to dent the populist grievance-based appeal that these red state workers are, you know, that they're being left behind somehow when he's the only one who's done anything. In fact, it's the opposite, that he's actually creating a future, the jobs that they can move into without college degrees and at higher wages and build that future together, that's going to become more and more clear. The other thing that's so that we keep talking.
Well, let's get into that on a future pod with Greg for sure. I know we're working on that one.
Right. But the other thing, though, yeah, and Greg Sargent pointed a lot of this out. In fact, we were trying to get him on today's show, but we couldn't swing it. So we're going to interview him, have him on next week, hopefully. But the points that Greg made are clear. And maybe we could at least put that his piece in the show notes. So I kept saying during the last cycle, they keep doing the crazy. We keep doing the work. You know, we'll do better than we thought, than people think. The work the Biden administration did and the things that Joe Biden and his team accomplished is only now going to really be felt. So we did the work. They did the work. And it's now going to be clearer and clearer every day. The other thing that I said is that they keep doing the crazy. That contrast will be part of why Joe Biden continues to succeed and Democrats continue to succeed. And we already have seen now, and we'll get into this, but we'll already have seen how with the speaker fight, with the debt ceiling, here we are, we're going to avoid a recession. We're going to keep people in their jobs. We're actually creating them. And instead, no, they want to make sure we go into a recession, make sure millions and millions of people are on the unemployment line. And they may purposely blow up the debt ceiling. You know, McCarthy said, oh, well, you know, does McCarthy have any ability to stop that? Because the crazy are in charge. So I think it's that contrast. Even if they do things like that, it'll just make Joe Biden's leadership and the work that Democrats and a few occasionally here and there on really important bills, the Republicans, and they should get credit for that, the bipartisan support. But it's clear, I think it's going to be clearer that, oh, that's what the MAGA extreme really is about. And this kind of calm, steady, get it done, do the work, build for the future, built for every American leadership of Biden is going to become clear too. And I think that's the contrast that that contrast. It's been a contrast, by the way, that worked in 2020. It worked in 2022. And I think will people who are wringing their hands about 2024 and Joe Biden stop it. I think it's that contrast that the American people will continue to respond to.
Joe, before I ask you to tell us how you really feel about how Joe Biden has done for the last 2 years, let me ask you this. Now that you've gone over a lot of the overwhelming positive, what advice would you have for the White House? And I know you tweeted about this week, but how can we do a better job shaping kind of some of this narrative? Where can they be more proactive?
I think they got to go totally on the offensive. You see, like the press just is not, they're locked in the both sides-ism stuff still. You know, I retweeted Ron Klain today in response to the GDP numbers. There was a piece where Politico is covering this as the economy grows, even as we brace for a recession.
It's like same sentence.
That big butt in the same breath. Yeah, in the same system, good news. And Klain tweeted, and I'm going to quote, apparently the word Biden's plan is working, just are too hard to type, unquote. And I think it's they got to take this crap on because it's just amazing. It's the same thing with the documents. I mean, the documents, Biden should immediately order, particularly after Pence. And by the way, I think every administration out there, past administration, Bush, Obama, anybody who handled these documents are doing the same thing Pence did now, going through their files. Yeah. And making sure. But Biden should just order the intel community to do a complete review of how these documents are handled at the end of in transition periods with as administrations change hands, investigate it completely, do a complete review, and make stringent recommendations on how it can be that process can be improved, because wittingly or unwittingly, this should never happen. These documents shouldn't be in my garage, and they shouldn't be in Mar-a-Lago, and they shouldn't be in Pence's office. And so I'm ordering the Intel community, you know, whoever, to do that stringent review and make top to bottom recommendations on how these documents should be handled and secured as administrations change hands. And the current investigations of are exactly where they, beyond that, the current investigations on whether things happened wittingly or unwittingly or anything occurred, they are exactly where they need to be in an independent counsel, in the hands of two independent counsels, and let the chips fall where they may. But damn it, I'm ordering the Intel community to make recommendations so that this doesn't happen again. Period. Just lead into it. And that's really hard to do with Fox and everybody, pouncing on this like they never did on Trump. It's just, you know, it's all like, and then immediately all the mainstream media outlets out there, you know, like clockwork, follow the crumbs that Fox News and everybody else is pushing. You know, it's not crumbs, the outrage. It's an outrage machine. And as that machine goes in, you know, impacts social media, Twitter, the whole thing, then you've now driven the narrative again. We've got to get control of that narrative. And I think the president has a bully pulpit. And on things like, you know, when these things start to happen, like documents, I think they've got to be more aggressive. And by the way, look, I've been through this stuff. The main problem in a lot of these situations is whenever the politics, the need politically to answer something clashes with the legal dynamic that requires you not to say something. Again, you know, talking about classified information, what was in them, all those things, you can't do it. By the same token, politically, everybody wants to, you know, the press is saying, well, what was in them? So what I'm saying is anytime that dynamic is there, you're going to lose the politics. I mean, there's no way that you're the president of the United States, you're governing, you're going to do it by the book. You're going to turn everything over. You're going to cooperate. I mean, if you're not Donald Trump, you're going to turn everything over. You're going to order your folks to keep their mouths shut and just cooperate and get things done the way it's supposed to be done. And yeah, at some point we'll all, you know, the independent counsel will say, hey, this is what happened. And while these documents shouldn't have been there, again, this is why I think the president should be out there ordering a review. Because I think, by the way, I think both independent counsels, I'll be shocked if that's not what one of their first things that they, the first finding, whether it's the one looking at Trump or the one looking at Biden, and whether Biden and Pence end up being with the same independent counsel, because that case might go in the same bucket. Okay, I'll bet you now that the very first thing both independent counsels state as a finding is there's a flaw in the way documents are handled at the end of transitions and a change of government, and recommend the stringent review and much stronger protocols to prevent it from happening wittingly or unwittingly. And then the next thing will be, in the case of Donald Trump, it wasn't wittingly, it was wittingly, I mean, you know, whatever, and therefore we're recommending X, or, and maybe that's what they'll find out about Biden too. But far more likely that the Biden, as best we know, both Biden and Pence, it seems inadvertent, they immediately did what they were supposed to do, turn them. That's what I'm saying. So I think this is more about the Biden people having to deal with politics and the legal matter, and that's always a very difficult thing. If you're Joe Trippi and you're the one of the political operatives around, there's a lot of things I can say. Oh yeah, I would do this and I would do that a lot differently. I don't have a lawyer in my face saying shut up, which is what happens when you're in that political versus legal predicament. But in the end, do I think it's going to be matter a whit for Joe Biden's reelection? Hell no. It's going to be like 18 months from now. Shoot, you know, there isn't anything that anybody's done. Look at all the stuff he's done over the last 2 years. And we're still, you know, look at everything that's occurred. But 2 months from now, we'll be on to something else. The outrage machine will, the outrage machine on the right was going, no matter how the Biden people handled this, they would have been outraged. Yeah, the instant. Wouldn't matter. You know, and the thing that should have been outrageous would have been the Biden folks don't tell us crap, shred the documents or whatever, and we never hear about it. Now that would have been worth, in other words, and then the outrage machine finds out, yeah, all of us should have been outraged. That's not what happened, folks. So, you know the outrage machine. And I say this, like I know from every presidential campaign I've ever been in, it's too brutal a business to give the other side ammunition. And so, you know, is that part of what happened here? Yeah. But given the stakes, given classified documents, they didn't avoid the issue. They went public. I mean, they, you know, did what they needed to do in terms of the right thing, in terms of archives and Justice Department, and have been cooperating and publicly every now and then go, you know, there's more or whatever. But that's none of that's going to matter. I just don't think it has any impact. And I really doubt whether the independent counsel is. I actually am the other way around. Everybody says, oh, gosh, this is going to make it impossible to go after Trump on this. Wrong. Because I don't think Pence and Biden, I don't think there's going to be any charge of obstruction of justice. Then there's no way to, I don't think. I don't see any way. I think it's actually more likely that if Trump did obstruct justice and stop the Justice Department from doing its job on this, I actually think it's more likely that there's a finding that these two didn't and he did, and therefore recommend X, Y, and Z about Trump. I don't know what that'll be, but I don't think it helps Trump. Now, of course, Trump will, if that goes on, then Trump will, of course, say that it's a witch hunt and they only went after him and let everybody else go free and all that stuff. But it'll be more Trump insanity.
So I'm glad we got to Trump insanity. I think that's the perfect time to ask this. We have a few other things I want to get to next week at this point because we're running kind of short on time, but gotta hit one of my favorite stories of the week. Surprise, surprise. Guess who wants to be Trump's vice president? Joe, what do you make of Marjorie Taylor Greene angling really hard for that spot? Does it surprise you at all?
Well, but when you did the intro on this, you said that it was the worst job in the world. Are you saying it could be in Trump's VP is the worst job in the world?
It's got to be one of the worst jobs in the world. Joe, I have worked for you for 12 years, and I can never recall a time that you tweeted to your million-person following trying to get me killed. Maybe I missed it. I don't know. But that sounds pretty terrible.
Yeah, but you're saying Trump doing that to Pence. It's not the VP's job. It's a pretty good job, I think, particularly if you want to be president someday. Because, no vice president, past, former or sitting, has ever been denied the presidential nomination of their party if they sought it, except for possibly, because I still have arguments with other folks about this, but possibly Dan Quayle, who I think kind of like thought about it for 3 weeks and then didn't run. But that's beside the point. So it's actually a pretty good job. I understand why she'd want it. That's like should scare the hell out of everybody who's listening that she'd be a heartbeat away from. You talk about, a heartbeat away. Marjorie Taylor Greene, a heartbeat away from succeeding Donald Trump if he eats too many more burgers and something were to go, bad, horribly bad. If he were to win, that should scare the hell out of everybody because I can't imagine anybody being crazier than Trump, but she would give it a run for the money, folks. I mean, and the ticket would be crazy. So it doesn't stun me at all. I actually think it's possible that he might do it. he and DeSantis are going to have to try to out MAGA each other. So, you know, you look at this, and is MAGA that crazy?
I'm glad you asked that, because the last thing I wanted to hit today, obviously there was that new Emerson poll that had Trump up pretty big on DeSantis. I don't think that's a huge surprise. But if you look at the other potential candidates right now in the MAGA sphere, everyone's kind of trying to do things like they're running. Look at what Nikki Haley's doing. I mean, even Ron DeSantis, who's very obviously trying to run for president, has not said, I'm running for president. Is there a reason for that?
I mean, a couple of things. One, every poll that I've seen shows Trump, you know, winning 45% of the party, not over 50, but, you know, in the 40s, with the closest candidate to him, DeSantis, being in, you know, low 30s, even high 20s. So you're looking at this, and the real question here, I think, for all of them is, okay, let's even assume you can defeat Donald Trump. By the way, I don't think so, because, again, given the way the Republican nomination system works and winner take all in a lot of their states, Trump only had to get like 28, 29 in some of those states and win all the delegates. At 40, 45, I don't see how you get by that. You know, oh, I get him one-on-one. Okay. So DeSantis gets him one-on-one, and Trump only gets 45, and DeSantis gets 55, and he wins all the winner-take-all places, and DeSantis wins the nomination. If you're DeSantis and that happens, you'd have to, you know, I don't know, Alex, you'd have to ask yourself, oh, yeah, this will be the election where Donald Trump gets really, really gracious and immediately says, yeah, I lost. And by the way, DeSantis won. And I urge every single one of my MAGA folks that love me and worship me, I urge all the patriots to vote for Ron DeSantis. Now, if you believe that, and I don't think DeSantis does. So in other words, you're in this weird, all of them are in this weird predicament. First, can you beat him? Second of all, if you beat him, if you were the one that beats him, is that a strategy for getting your butt kicked in the general? Because a lot of those MAGA folks are going to sit on their damn hands, probably even if Trump says vote for him. They won't be able to handle that their dear leader has been soundly defeated. So when you look at that, I think a lot of them would love to go, obviously have tons of ambition, obviously hoping, some of them, I'm sure, hoping he's indicted or somehow taken off the field, playing field. So they still got to, they're still out there, you know, building their team, setting up, you know, massive fundraising. DeSantis has plenty of money. But, you know, and traveling around and trying to increase their strength out there. But it's all, I think, in case. I'm not even sure DeSantis will do it, that he'll go, that Trump will have much competition. And the people that seem like more determined are the Larry Hogans. You know, I mean, here a purple governor really governed moderately, had a lot of Democrats and Republicans in Maryland enthused with how he ran the state for two terms. I think, you know, who I think wants to challenge the party to come back to sanity and common sense. Those guys, I'm talking, using Larry Hogan as an example, I think they seem very determined to try to do that. I question, not about whether you like Larry Hogan or not, I am one who was really surprised, I would say, about how well he governed. I didn't agree with him on everything, but I mean, I'm one of these people who thinks we need two parties in America who believe in democracy and compete on ideas, and he's one of those kind of people. The Republican Party, the MAGA-led party, is not that party today. And I can't believe, even though I think he's very determined and there may be a couple others, that that's going to work out very well. or end well, although it may help make the point.
Well, and remember what the Maryland GOP did after the Hogan administration was over. They went and nominated one of right. the absolute craziest people they could. So I think I know how this one's going to end, Joe.
Right. And right. And Larry Hogan went out and said, no, I'm not supporting him. That'd be crazy. So no, I'm just saying that. But I think the MAGA wannabes, I mean, the DeSantis's and maybe the Haley's out there who've sort of positioned themselves in that, you know, in that frame. I think it's a no win. I mean, I don't think they can beat him. And then I think, okay, Joe, you're an idiot. You're wrong. Of course they can beat, you know, DeSantis can beat him. Great. If you really think that's the minute that Trump turns completely gracious, not to mention Trump being completely gracious, but his base being completely gracious. Oh yeah, No, I mean that's what I'm saying. I think this is a fight within that wing that is going to. I think it's that contrast. The contrast of this fight between this wing that we're seeing now in the House. We're going to see it with Trump. Do they even try to stop him? And if they do, you know, what's that fight look like? Who tries to out Trump? Trump. And if they do, and they out Trump him and win, how do they hold either the same? By the way, the same elements in the Republican Party is growing a little bit. I mean, it's still less than a third of the party. I mean, when you ask them questions like, "Do you consider yourself a MAGA Republican?" You know, it's something like 30% say, "No, I'm not a MAGA Republican." But the MAGA Republicans still, and I think will control the party for some time, even if Trump is defeated. And it'll be interesting to see Trump, they haven't won the popular vote in a presidential campaign but once. I mean, George W. Bush running for re-election in 2004 is the only popular vote that they won. Out of all of them going back. So he didn't win those. He certainly only won lost them by 12, 13, 14,000, but all that stuff that we saw happen in 2020. If 30,000 MAGA hats sit out the race in Georgia because they can't countenance that he defeated Donald Trump, we're talking about you can't lose any of them. And I think DeSantis or whoever defeats him will lose some enough. So that's sort of where I think that's all going. And to answer your question, because you have a question here saying, are they going to learn their lesson? No, the Republicans will not learn their lesson. There will be this fight. The only, like, I still question whether anybody will actually, and I don't, like I said, I don't mean Larry Hogan or, you know, somebody who makes or even a Liz Cheney who decides, okay, I don't care. I'm not going to let him, have no contest here. I'm going to, take it on within the party and make the case. That candidate, I think, as we've talked about, has, that's going to work great. I think, by the way, cheer that person on, whoever they are. But the other thing is, no, they're not going to learn their lesson. And the really only question is, does somebody like DeSantis actually have it in them, realizing that they're probably that? Yeah, even if they think in their heads, their ego, I can beat this guy. How do they see the victory going into 2024 against Joe Biden or any Democrat who would be getting the nomination? The last thing I'll say, and then is. I still think in the end, all of this comes down to how successful the Biden administration is, not today, not last year, but 18 months from now. And what I mean by that is inflation totally vanquished? Did we go into a recession or was it shallow or no recession? Is Ukraine kicking Russia's ass and Putin is even in more hot water in his country than he is today. are all the, and the, because of the leadership of Biden holding the coalition and alliances together, are the infrastructure projects underway? Chips are being manufactured in Arizona and Ohio. All these things are, if his presidency is seen as being successful and his favorable numbers are already going up, then the nomination on the Democratic side is worth something, whether Biden wants it or someone, you know, or it goes somewhere else. I'm not getting it, but that nomination is worth something, and that, because that nomination with that success will defeat a party led by Donald Trump or a party led by somebody else with Trump telling his people to sit on their ass. And that's it's one of those, either way, that's the predicament the Republican Party will be in by the end of the 2024 nomination process, one way or the other. And so, you know, unless Trump decides he's not running, and, you know, announces I want to live the rest of my life in Mar-a-Lago, and I don't want to go back to the White House, you guys all fight it out. I don't see him doing that either. But that's the only other solution I can see to the problem. Anyway, thanks for letting me rant, Alex. Thanks, everyone, for listening to That Trippy Show. Please subscribe to That Trippy Show and leave a review on Apple or wherever you listen. You can always send us a question to thattrippyshow@gmail.com or leave us a question in a review on iTunes. See you next week, and we're going to try to get Greg Sargent on, and we'll put his piece in today's show notes if you want to see it, so you'll get a taste of what we want to talk to him about. Thank you all, and see you next week.